moment before 2 o'clock with a caller who actually, I think, in a very important way, gave us a direct pivot into this conversation, because I think most important, alongside of the psychology of self-hatred that happens with us as a people, is that you mentioned it among global African people.
Yes. Yes, because, of course, we're dealing with a global power, the global European power, and a global economy, which is under the influence of course, under the control of Europeans and works to the benefit of Europeans. And it's in the context of that global economic power and the attendant military and other powers that the African personality is shaped. Mm. So hardly any African group, any significant African group, escapes that shaping process.
There are those from the Caribbean, as in the caller, and I wanted to maybe have us talk about this, who feel that perhaps maybe people from the Caribbean, for example, because of what is projected here as a strong work ethic coming in from out of the country, working, setting up businesses, that it may be significantly different there.
But we see the same game being played. As we talk further in this segment, we will see that all classes of black people are servants to Europeans. And whether you're middle class, upper class, if there is one, a lower class, you're from the continent or from the Caribbean, from the American system here, the basic role is the same. Mm. But within that role are different levels and different degrees and different characters. The white system does not produce one black character. It produces a set of characters.
For example?
And it produces characters that serve different functions. And those characters will have some relationship to their geographical background, the historical experience, and to other kinds of things that go on in the world.
You said the system creates characters.
Oh, yes.
What do you mean? Give me an example of what you mean.
It will create, if it needs, for instance, a certain number of blacks to indicate to the world that it is liberal, it will create a small middle class that gives it the image of being a liberal country. For instance, I'm talking about the United States now.
Okay.
And these people then will be used to try to deceive other black people into thinking that their lack of achievement is a result of some individual deficiency in their personality.
Mm-hmm.
It often so needs a group that sees to its interests among the oppressed masses, and it often then must create a class such as the neo-colonial class, the ruling governmental classes, to see to its interests while creating the impression again that these people are free and independent. So it will even create criminals to justify repression. So it has a role for almost any segment of our community. And all of these roles, in one way or the other, justifies its existence, you see.
Do you, in the context that you are presenting this particular reality, see this as a very deliberate process that is taking place?
Oh, very much so. It has to be deliberate because it is necessary to maintain the economic social system.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it is thought out and worked through very deliberately.
This would say, in other words, then, that we might reach a point, let's say, where things get so bad that you're saying that those individuals who are in these positions that we're talking about say, well, wait a minute, this is getting a little too bad.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to open up a segment and create this to calm that down.
Yes, and this happens quite frequently. We saw it happen during the 60s, 70s. I often use that phrase that you hear all the time about things change to remain the same. So often you create apparent change to keep situations the same.
Mm-hmm.
The European learned, of course, that they did not have to maintain a direct military presence, say, on the African continent or in other areas where Africans live, in order to protect their political and economic interest. So you create then a ruling class an indigenous ruling class there, you see, and there appears to be change, and it is a change of a sort. However, the basic economic dominance does not change at all. You see, I often talk about what I call the constants, you see, in our relationships with Europeans. And it's important that we look at the constants, not the superficial changes, you see.
Interesting. Yeah.
And often what happens is that first the European makes superficial the African intellect and makes superficial the African intelligence so that the African can be deceived by superficial changes while the basic and fundamental relationships are not changed at all. Down at the Institute of Technology, I was talking to my students the other day, and I told them that, you know, now you are electrical engineers, but your fundamental relationship between your fundamental relationship to whites is no different from your grandparents who were in slavery, because that fundamental relationship is one of producing profits for your European masters. And so if at some point making blacks engineers, or letting them be engineers, or letting them be computer technologists, or even letting them be president of the United States will maintain that constant relationship, that change will occur. And so often people then will respond to that apparent change and miss the fact that the fundamental relationships have not changed at all.
You mentioned in the context of these constants, it is, and we mentioned this a bit earlier in the first hour, and I mentioned it to you when we were in the break, the one thing that does seem to absolutely be constant and consistent in whatever discussions we have, whether they be about politics, economics, culture, family, whatever, is this issue of learning to love ourselves versus self-hatred.
Right.
How does the system go about creating or perpetuating this pattern of self-hatred?
Self-hatred is necessary for the system. I want to lead this segment off by indicating something I say quite often, that in order for this system to maintain itself, it is a political necessity for black people to be out of their minds. And I follow this up with the refrain that I am not being rhetorical. I mean that literally. We have to be out of our minds. We cannot be within our basic natural personality. When you have a minority group of people that exploits a vast majority group of people the way our people are exploited along with other people, and those people are exploited without direct being directly put under the gun, or that being directly put into concentration camps, when those people are exploited by just going about what they see as their daily way of living, those people can only be exploited by being out of their minds, by being off center, off base. And I try to indicate then one of the fundamental things about a black psychology and African psychology in the context of today's world is that the African psychology must begin from the fundamental assertion that it is a political necessity for black people to be out of their mind. It is a political necessity for black people to be dumb. And that does not excuse even blacks with PhDs and well-educated. And I'll explain that in greater detail later on, you see, as we go along, how dumbness becomes endemic through all class levels of the black community, and how even education itself is an education into dumbness.
It is very interesting that you are saying it. I recall that in Richard Pryor's, I guess, peak of success, when he released an album called That Nick Is Crazy.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about it was, is when one listened to the content of the things that he was pointing out some very serious things that were part of living in this society.
Definitely.
But he was saying something in that concept, which was that you did have to operate from the mentality of being crazy to actually function in this space that they had put you in.
You could not, the world could not be other than it is unless this were the case. You see, so self-hatred is the central keystone of the whole edifice.
Interesting.
And almost any behavior that you see our people engaged in that maintains us under the domination of the European is in some way related to self-hatred, and there are a number of methods that are used to produce this state of mind, all because of self-negation.
We'll come back and we'll pick up on that point, and we'll do that right after these words. At 1190 WLIB, I see some of you already have decided that it's time to talk to Dr. Amos Wilson, and I can appreciate that.
Things African must somehow be degraded. And even in the name of progress among us, often progress is brought at the price of course, denaturing ourselves, mm-hmm. deculturizing ourselves. Mm-hmm. In making it in the system, we have to turn loose the culture. You know, I say in my forthcoming book that the African cannot be a slave and an African at the same time. And we cannot be servants of another people and Africans at the same time either, you see. And so, nobody...
Wait a minute, we better repeat that. Because I heard something there.
Mm-hmm.
Say that again.
That we cannot be servants and Africans at the same time. You see, to be faithful servants to these people requires that we give up our African culture and heritage to a great extent, vastly transform it. And of course, you see this in graphic terms in the slave camp. You're not going to hold your original language or your religion or cultural values or social organization and relationships. And you see in the slave camp, all of these things are ultimately wiped out or at least severely reduced. Now, of course, you have today those of us who are getting educated, but we get educated at the price, of course, of learning to speak like the other people, to think like them, dress like them, and the hope that... So again, and that is the price for movement, often, for what we call social mobility. And so consequently, we often then have to lose vital parts of ourselves and culture in order to move or be mobile in the system itself, which implies often... that those characteristics are not worthy of keeping.
You know, it's interesting that you're saying this. I had a chance to look last night at a trade magazine, a music trade, which had a picture of a very popular recording artist who is an African-American recording artist. And he was performing, I believe, in Ireland or someplace. And wherever he performed, they had on the little dress, you know, native the dress that they have from their culture.
Right.
And... what was interesting was it occurred to me in seeing this, and the people who had this on were like the record executives from the area. And this was a real thing. They were greeting him in their ethnic apparel.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, the same shot in Africa with something very, very ethnic.
Yes.
Would produce another kind of reaction.
A completely different impression. Often in the process of doing business, as I go downtown, I get immediate reactions when I wear my African cap. You know, it's a whole different thing there. And so I could almost manipulate the behavior of the people I deal with by the way I dress. And if I put on my cap, I get quite a few negative reactions or fear reactions or other kinds of reactions, and it changes the nature of the business that I'm doing often with people.
From a hat?
Yes, very much so. And
I've seen it, boy. But
yeah,
it's deep.
And of course, if I dress as a European, I have no problem. In fact, it smooths relations of a type. Even in terms of teaching in my previous institutions, if I came in dressed in African garb, it was read by many people as some form of rebellion or other. If I came in wearing, of course, European dress, it would indicate, of course, what is it, my ambitiousness, my desire to achieve, or something else of that nature.
But now there are those who might be in listening say, well, okay, Is that fair? What happens if someone from another particular area of the world, any European area, came in their native dress to the college or the campus? Maybe there might be the same reaction. How do you respond?
If some Europeans came in their native...
to lecture or whatever, you know.
Well, that scene is par for the course. And as quite appropriate... and in tune.
In other words, you were attempting to take them into a deeper meaning of your presentation or whatever.
Because, of course, we read clothes. We read images yeah. that are given off by clothes. And this is particularly true of African Americans.
Hmm.
Because often it has been used to symbolize rebellion on our parts or
mm-hmm.
or symbolize non-acceptance of standard values and approaches, which is extremely anxiety-provoking for whites, you see.
Hmm.
Because their system, as I indicated earlier, of course, relies upon our acceptance of it and seeking to be a part of it. And when you signal that you may not be this way, and that you may be, and there may be others out there like you who are not this way, then there's that system which depends on us being in a certain way is threatened. And you get a fear reaction and a defensive reaction, you see, and quite often an offensive one, because it's an attempt to put back in place what is getting out of place. Of course, it's yeah. part of the old thing about keeping one in his place.
You are.
Because there is a certain place that we must be kept in order for the system to be kept.
And this goes back to your statement, we cannot be servants or slaves and Africans at the same time.
We cannot. No.
Amazing.
That's why the system must denature you in various sorts of ways.
And certainly deculturize you.
Deculturize you, certainly. Yeah. And in the name of a lot of things.
You
know, the name of education or the name of
professionalism.
Joining the mainstream or whatever. But that's the essence of power anyway.
Mm. Yeah.
You see, that the group in power is in a position to demand certain behavioral characteristics and certain dress codes and the whole bit.
And it's certainly one of those things, of course, is to demand the idea that those people who are in the oppressed position actually hate themselves. And certainly power is being built on that in this case. We will break for a minute. I know Pat Atwell is standing by, probably with both ears very keenly placed to what we're talking about this afternoon. I know that. And we'll come back and talk with Dr. Amos Wilson. And you, those of you who have joined us already, standing by. We'll come back and we'll move to your telephone calls for Dr. Amos Wilson and the psychology of self-hatred among global African people. When we return after this at 1190 WLIB.
Our ultimate truths and how we oftentimes don't get at the ultimate truths when we discuss things, especially a question like this. And if I'm wrong, you can tell me. But I, from the history that I've learned and from what I can deduce from it, the whole thing really got started from the whole idea of the first Bible. Not the first Bible, but the versions of the Bible where you have the Genesis and the curses and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Nicene Council.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from down from there, with the papal bull.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Pope Martin V and Bishop Las Casas.
Yes, yes.
See, that really... That really, put a stamp on all of it.
Let's get a response, perhaps, from mm-hmm. Professor Wilson.
Definitely the Bible, as it has been used in many instances, has been used to justify many things. And certainly it has been used to justify the enslavement and servitude of black people. Because one of the things you want to do in order to justify yourself, if you're a ruler, and also to even justify to the servant his own position, is a source of authority, or a source that is held as an authority by both groups. And since often, at least for the Europeans, the Bible is seen, at least some, as a source of authority and truth, and at the same time by Africans who have been held in captivity as such, when one invokes it to justify servitude, it has a very powerful and persuasive effect on both groups and helps to justify it. I don't know whether the Bible was used as the beginning of it, because slavery, of course, has a very long history, even older than the Bible. But certainly the Bible has been a major part, has been used by our enslavers to justify our enslavement.
Professor Wilson, would you comment on something that does come up from time to time, this issue related to religion again? There has been, obviously, a question raised by a number of people, nationalists and otherwise, mm-hmm. of what the effect is of the worship of a Caucasian Jesus Christ figure in the church, which should be mentioned, operates against the backdrop of a black Madonna.
Certainly.
Within the same religion that it actually is practiced in.
Certainly. But the thing that we have to recognize very clearly is that in a racist society, or in a society where people are held in oppression, every institution in that society is essentially going to have the same goal in mind, that is to maintain the status quo. Mm-hmm. No institution escapes from that. And this is the thing that we have to keep in mind. Religion is an institution of this system. Education is an institution. The family structure is an institution. The justice system is an institution. The economic system is an institution. And each one of those institutions are not there to work against the interests of the people who are in control of them. So it should come as no surprise to anyone that religion will serve the intentions of the people who are in control of it, and in control of its interpretation. We should not expect religion to be an exception to the rule. And I often tell, our people, and I try to get across the idea, you see, we have to recognize very clearly that it is through the institutions constructed by a society that society actually creates the personalities and the people and structures the society so that it may maintain its existence. And it is not going to permit an institution to exist that works against its existence. For religion ultimately to exist in many states, it has to become an arm of the state. It cannot. When it is seen as being against state interests, you will see the religious persons being persecuted and destroyed. The Romans stopped persecuting the Christians to a good extent because it ultimately makes Christianity a part of the Roman state. Mm. And it functions to serve the state. This is why we have to recognize when we look at institutions of any kind, that includes the family institution as well. The institution upon which families are based, which we'll talk about in some following program about love, that's supposedly the basis for marriage. We will see, when you look at those institutions in relationship to oppressed people, they will always work in opposition to their names, to their titles, okay? Such that we're going to talk about the reversal, how black people must be made backwards. We have to be backwards, and our personalities have to be reversed to maintain the system. And it is the institutions that reverse the personality.
What do you mean by the institutions in this case?
Blacks have to be made dumb by education. Okay. They have to go to school to learn to be dumb. All right? We have to learn the economic system in order to be what? Poor. All right? We have to go to the justice system in order to be criminalized. And so you will see we are hooked into the European marriage system to have what? Broken families. And you study each one of them, and you look at the religious system to fall under the control of these other people, be victimized. I often say the churches will take us to hell. Mm. Because often the ministers and other people who are in them, because of the way they're structured and because of their own miseducation in guiding the people, misguide the people. They have love for them. They have great intentions for them. But with wrong knowledge, if they're struggling with their own self-hatred, you're not going to be filled with self-hatred and distorted, have a distorted mind and guide people properly, no matter how much you love them and how great your intentions are. Mm-hmm. And therefore, when you build churches based on, and he mentioned the conferences, the Nicene conference where we know that the Bible was sort of put together, and when you look at schools of theology that interpret the Bible within the context of the European power structure, and you have ministers then who move forward under that theology, despite their love, often they, and despite their intention to get the people into heaven, they will often misguide them into hell. Mm. They would have to, given this system, because you see, religion in its true sense is an extremely rebellious situation. Because, first of all, the truly religious person is not a person who falls under the authority of other individuals.
Mm-hmm.
One loves God above all else, so that all else has no power. You see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when you love men, when you love the acceptance of men, the approval of men, status and position, and you need men to love you and all of this kind of stuff, these people are your gods. And you worship them before anything, and therefore you fall under their power. You see, and therefore the truly religious person who loves God better than life cannot be coerced in any kind of behavior, even at the threat of his death. And therefore you have very few really religious people in the world today, you know.
WLIB, Professor Amos Wilson is our guest, and you're on the air with him at WLIB.
Yes, my brothers, I respect both of you.
Thank you.
All right, and I'm sitting here and I'm taking all this in, and at the same time I can't help but to think about what happened in Brooklyn with the telephone company, because I feel it's a sabotage thing, and I'll get into that in a little later. And concerning our sense of self-hatred, because I feel it's a retaliation against our boycotting the system. You know, and what better way strategically would be to knock out a phone company, and this way everything else seems to be helpless for the moment. A lot of confusion. You know, and I feel there are some solutions to counter self-hate. And with me, right now, they're more or less geared towards physical releasement as far as working out and just training hard, just to keep alert and keep my mind clear and supplement with prayer. You know, because I'm not just going to sit here and pray and don't be able to back anything or protect my life or my loved ones, you know. And last part, Brother Gary, is remember, the white man has a God complex, because we need to dwell into that and we can understand who we are and where we're really coming from, because we're bombarded with the psychic garbage every day with soap operas and everything else. And then you look at this series, America, and that deeply, to me, analyzes the whole situation. I don't see if we need to go any further with that, but I do appreciate that this brother is here bringing this out in the light.
Thank you very much for the call.
He mentions the God complex. Of course, making Jesus white in image is a part of the creation of the God complex.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, one of the fundamental ways we think as human beings is through what we call associative thinking, associating one thing with another. And of course, the nationalists and others who've spoken to this issue about Jesus being white are speaking in part to the painting of this image to take advantage of this associative tendency that we have as people. The idea being Jesus being a white man as presented by those pictures. Then ultimately means that the divinity of his whiteness is in some way transferred to people with a white skin.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in praying to this white Jesus, one embeds this whole image of whiteness as somehow higher than into the mind itself.
Does this perpetuate within this dimension of self-hatred that we're talking about?
Very much so. Yeah. It creates a very deliberate inferiority complex. And of course, when you couple that with all of the images that we get on TV and radio, and with the reality, too, of whites being in control, it's not too far distant then to reach the conclusion that these people are in their position because implied in terms of this curse and so forth. It's not difficult for many people, consciously or at least unconsciously, to get the idea that white and divinity go together. And you see this kind of thing. And we'll talk about this more as we talk about the psychology of self-hatred, because it's easy when you look around the world and you see black people suffering everywhere you look, and you see whites in relatively better shape, for some people to reach the conclusion that we are cursed. You see?
Exactly.
And this leads to tremendous problems.
Indeed.
In personality.
1190 is WLIB Radio in the Key of Life. My guest is Professor Amos Wilson. Our topic this afternoon is the psychology of self-hatred among global African people. We'll come back with more of your telephone calls for our guest right after these words.
To fall for that image. You know, I've talked with people who look at our condition, as I talked about earlier, and you mentioned Garvey, for instance. You'll see in his work,
right,
he has this realization. You know, everywhere I go, I see the black man at the bottom of the social economic ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And many of us are intrigued by this thing. Why is it that everywhere we go, no matter what, even in countries we call our own, we find other ethnic groups and other people often in control of the real economy and other things in the country. Now, when you make that observation, and then you've been cheated of a knowledge of history, such that you may not know of any period of time during which blacks were not in that position,
mm-hmm,
you then may reach the conclusion that, well, we've always been in that position. You see, mm-hmm, and there's a logic then that begins to develop. And I've heard people then who, not being knowledgeable of black history, African history, and looking at our current circumstances, then ask them the question, then what happened to us such that we are in the position that we're in today? And such that we, as far as I can read, which isn't very far, because you see, too, the ruling group has controlled the reading, you see. We've always been in this position.
Mm.
And then some individual reach the conclusion then that we must be in this position as a result of having done something wrong as a people some time ago. And of course, up comes the whole mythology of Ham, and the only book often that blacks are really permitted to read to any degree that appears to supply an answer.
The Bible, in other words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're the servant of men, which is what you see yourself in today, as a result of the fact that you did this and thus and so, and therefore you are cursed to be in this role. And consequently, then, you have people who now fall under the psychological weight of this kind of mythology. They will not read often a book like Chancellor Williams that will give them a much more realistic reason as to why we are in the position we are today.
It's interesting. I mean, it gets into as you think, so shall you be. Indeed.
Oh, WLIB. Definitely.
You're in the air right now with Professor Amos Wilson. Go right ahead, please.
Yes, hello.
Good afternoon.
Yes, hi. You know, it's coincidental that I just started reading Dr. Wilson's book today.
Thank you.
And I turned the radio on, you know, coming out of school, and I heard it on.
Great.
And because I'm doing a course in educational, you know, psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were studying Skinner's stimulus response theories, which I had a lot of problems with.
A question for our guests very quickly, if you can, too.
You know, how can you reconcile, you know, Skinner's, you know, stimulus response, you know, theories, mm-hmm, you know, with, you know, the self-hatred?
Okay.
We have just a few seconds before news.
Oh, I see. Okay, because I'd like to pursue
that. Why don't we hold in, and we'll ask this caller to stand by. We'll take a break. This was the first phase of his campaign to reorient the minds of his people. Now, he appealed to all Negro, quote-unquote, newspaper publishers and owners to stop carrying skin-bleaching and hair-straightening advertisements, as they tended to make our people feel that to be somebody, they must try to look like white people. These businessmen became angry with him. They were well paid for pictorial advertisements. Subscriptions cannot, quote, carry a newspaper, and they had no intention to run a paper on sentiment. As the thoughts in the slogan, again, quote, Negro, be yourself, gained more adherence, the tone of the advertisements was changed. So in every phase of life that subjugated their true self, he attacked it. Said he, take down the pictures of white women from your walls and elevate your own women to that place of honor. They are, for the most part, the burden bearers of the race. And mothers, give your children dolls that look like them to play with and cuddle. They will learn as they grow older to love and care for their own children and not neglect them. Men and women, he continued, God made us as his perfect creation. He made no mistake when he made us black with kinky hair. It was divine purpose for us to live in our natural habitat, the tropical zones of the earth.
Forget the white man's banter that he made us in the night and forgot to paint us white. That we were brought here against our will is just a natural process of the strong enslaving the weak. We have outgrown slavery, but our minds are still enslaved to the thinking of the master race. Now, take these kinks out of your mind instead of out of your hair. You are capable of all that is common to men of other races. So let us start now to build big business, commerce, industry, and eventually a nation of our own to protect us wherever we choose to live. A beggar race can never be respected. Stop begging for jobs and create your own. Look around you and wherever you see the need for factories and business, supply it. Stop begging for a chance. Make it yourself and remember that God helps those who help themselves. Said a Southern woman after she had joined the organization, Garvey is giving my people backbones where they had wishbones. No man had spoken to them like this before. Wherever he went, he stirred something in them so that they could never be the same self-satisfied or happy-go-lucky human beings again. Preachers had told them about the sweet by and by, but he was telling them about the now and now. The good book says that, quote, your just reward shall be in heaven on that great day. But Garvey said, work for it right here and get it here or take it, and then the spiritual reward shall surely come. The words of Marcus Garvey, 1190 WLIV. They ring true today during African History Month, 1987. It's 10 minutes after the hour, 3 o'clock. You're inside of the GBE. I'm Gary Burr. We'll come back with our guest, Professor Amos Wilson, and the psychology of self-hatred among global African people. Our topic is the psychology of self-hatred among global African people. Our guest, Professor Amos Wilson, professor of psychology at the New York Institute of Technology and also at the College of New Rochelle. He's also author of the book, The Developmental Psychology of the Black Child. Professor Wilson, we had a guest who, a caller just a few moments ago who raised an area with Skinner, I do believe.
A very, very important area. Because the topic of what we call Skinnerian conditioning, or instrumental conditioning, is a standard topic raised in psychology. The essence of Skinnerian conditioning, or sometimes SR psychology, particularly of Skinner's type, named after B.F. Skinner, Harvard professor, who didn't so much discover new principles as just codify ways of behaving and consequences that already existed. The essence of it is that behavior is controlled by its consequences.
Okay.
That behavior that brings good consequences tends to be repeated and increased in frequency and probability of occurrence. Behavior that's followed by negative consequences tend to be decreased or eliminated. And a very simple but very powerful principle, and that's really the essence of it. And conditioning involves, to a good extent, you see, manipulating reward and punishment in order to bring about particular changes in behavior, you see. And so it's a very, very important psychology that many black students are educated in and don't understand at all.
What's the twist on it in terms of self-hatred?
The twist is the essence of power. You see, at first, this psychology is often presented in terms of a rat. You put a rat in a box or in some condition, and if it behaves in a certain way, you give it something to eat, you give it something to drink. Okay, that's a reward. If it behaves in a way you don't want it to behave, you give it an electric shock or punish it or don't give it food. So, of course, because it wants to eat, and of course you make sure you've starved it before you put it in to the system. So if it wants to eat and so forth, it eventually learns the relationship between certain behavior and certain consequences. So if by standing up on its two hind feet it gets fed, it will stand up on its two hind feet much more frequently than before the system was put into order, you see. So the rat is conditioned by living under those circumstances. The experimenter who has control of the rat, you see, can create certain behaviors or reinforce certain behaviors in the rat by determining which behaviors will be rewarded and which will be punished. Now, where black students are miseducated in these psychology classes is that often the lesson is left right there. Okay. And this is, and I use this experiment, as a matter of fact, to get people to understand the difference between equal education and a relevant education, of how a black student can be equally educated with a white student. They just learn the same thing and be made dumb by the same learning. Now, a black student and a white student can learn that principle in the same way, but it doesn't have the same effects. Because you can look at this relationship between the experimenter and this rat as a power relationship, as a political relationship, you see, which says this experimenter, who has control of the rewards and punishments of this rat, is able to create behavior in this rat as a result of having that power. You see, being that he has control over the rewards and punishment, he uses that control to condition the rat. And then when I move on from there, I ask my students then, who has control of the water that comes into your neighborhood? Who has control of the food, the control of the jobs, controls of the symbols of status, control of information? And we go on and on. Can't you see that you are the rat?
Mm-hmm.
You see, this is where you end when you're talking to black students. You don't end with the rat and the experimenter.
Right.
You see,
right.
And a black student who has not been taught that, and who has not been taken to have that experiment moved out of its standard presentation into politics and into the reality of his life is miseducated, even though he's learning the same thing that the white student learned, you see. And this is why I try to get across to the people, you must understand, having our people learn the same thing a white student learned is not going to get you out of your condition. If you look up on the Harlems, the Bed-Stuys, even whole nations where blacks live in the world today, they are boxes. And we are rats in them. And when you see the IMF and the United States banks and the other European countries manipulating reward and punishment, selling weapons and creating wars and doing all of these kinds of things, you have in principle the same thing, you see. And just as that rat's behavior is being created by the manipulation of reward and punishment, the behavior and attitudes of black people are being created by the control of European of rewards and punishment. This is the essence of power. The essence of power is the ability to selectively reward and punish what you want. Now, how does this relate to self-hatred? I hate to hold your people up, but I just want to, because this is a vital topic in psychology, and black students should deal with this topic very thoroughly because they're deep implication. When this is talked about, often the black student identifies himself with the experimenter, and the experimenter is a white man. And it's when you identify with him because he's a human being and the other thing is a rat. But when you identify with that experimenter, you're misidentifying yourself. You see, when the white student identifies himself with the experimenter, his identity is closer to reality, you see. And so in learning the same thing, his racial position is reinforced, even though it appears that he's getting the same education, you see. And people must learn the difference between so-called equal education. Getting equal education for black students is not getting them to learn the same thing white students are learning. And we're going to have to understand this. So then just as that conditioning situation presented by Skinner is what we call a rat in the box, the nations where our people's lives are controlled through the manipulation of Europeans is what we can call a nigger box. Mm-hmm. It is where Africans are created into niggers as a result of the manipulation of reward and punishment by Europeans. We have to keep that in mind. How do you create self-hatred then? Certain of that rat's behavior is associated with reward, with pleasure, with good feelings, with security, with love, if you want to call it that, you see. Mm-hmm. So whenever he performs that, he moves toward that behavior, and he emits that behavior because it brings those rewards. Or he emits that behavior because it helps him to escape from pain, from hunger, from fear, from insecurity, you see. Mm-hmm. And that's another method used in these Skinner boxes, you see, of where if we don't reward the animal, we permit him to escape pain. Okay, now then, listen. All right, now, just one other thing.
I saw echoes of slavery in my mind. On that
definitely.
One. Yeah,
and this is going to go back now to drug behavior and everything else we'll get to, you know, later on. Now, self-hatred, and this goes back to the first statement I made as one of the first methods that's used to breed self-hatred. Remember, the association of innate and personal and group characteristics with negative feelings and so forth. So then, how do you create self-hatred? You make everything that you innately are negative and painful. So that being black is made to be painful. Being African is made to be painful, you see. Identifying yourself as an African means you don't get rewarded. It means you go hungry. It means you don't get accepted, you see. Mm-hmm. And so by stacking all of these negatives onto African characteristics, it motivates the African to escape his characteristics and seek relief through that escape.
There's something that came up that is just such a graphic illustration of what you're saying in an advertising campaign mm-hmm. that never made Madison Avenue. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine was involved in this, and I don't know what the final rejection was based on, but this was in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And it was for an aspirin. And it said it was going to be positioned in the subways as, this is what you need for the black ache.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I mean, it was like, you know, when the whole deal and yeah. the whole experience of being black is just too much. Take this
yes.
for the black ache.
And believe me, we move toward pain relievers, which is, of course, why you look at the drugs, and these fundamentally are pain relievers.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not only talk about drugs.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk later on about sexual addictions, love, what we call love in our community, and other kinds of behaviors that are relievers of pain. One other statement, because the caller here mentioned something very, very, very rich and fundamental. This self-hatred also is related to this Skinner paradigm. You see, this is how you take knowledge in books and you Africanize it by seeing how it applies and can be used to your own interests.
Yes, yes.
You see,
yes.
And so, but I'll speak about that later on. I just want to, you got to.
But let's get to the calls. One more.
Because this relates.
These people are going to kill me now.
Yes,
go ahead.
But this relates to the second principle I wanted to mention that produces self-hatred, and that is to actually create the negative characteristics in the individual group via what I call the self-fulfilling vicious cycle, created incompetences and the creation of self of subcultures, but through the use of this Skinnerian conditioning, create the actual characteristics that you will come to hate later on, and that the individual will come to hate in and of himself. Mm. In other words, the black man, as we see him today, is a created person.
Okay. And
he's
an environmentally created person.
Yes, he is conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
You see, one of the reasons why you want to remove European power is that you want by removing that power, you also remove his ability to create you.
Mm-hmm.
And by gaining that power yourself, you move into the ability to be self-creating.
WLIB, I'm Gary Bird. You're on the air with Professor Amos Wilson. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Bird, and to the professor.
Good afternoon.
My question is, which have always puzzled me, concerning the Bible. I would like to ask him a question, and then if he can answer it, hang up and listen.
Okay, yes.
My question is that when in the Bible concerning Cain and Abel, I would like to know why was it that God, it said that God accepted that Abel offered a sacrifice of a slaughtered sheep or whatever. I would like for him to explain that as possible, because I'm really puzzled by it, and I would like to find out, a little bit more. If there any kind of psychological, setting behind that statement that is written in the Bible.
I think the last part gives us a better hook to it.
Yes, because I definitely have to be honest with you, I can't deal with the first segment of that question.
Yes.
Which certainly would have to be referred to religious scholars and people who've studied this kind of of information. And, of course, I'll just have to be very general even about the second portion of it, because I haven't worked at that in detail at all. Except to say, apparently, it depends on how you see this Bible being written. I mean, if you see it as the Word of God, that's a whole other thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you see it, though, as being written by people, as many books are written, to justify certain social systems and political systems,
mm-hmm.
then at least I would take a guess that it's written in this way to perhaps justify sacrifice as a way of giving praise to God,
mm-hmm.
and rather than the other way around. But that's as far as I can really
got it.
Take that issue.